Hi, I'm Kevin Barrett, and you're listening to Truth Jihad Radio, the radio show that brings on people from a wide variety of perspectives, presenting alternative information you're not going to hear in the mainstream. We're not talking alternative facts. We're talking more or less the real facts, or at least questioning what's going on from an intelligent, skeptical perspective. So I want to start by saying that I'm really sorry about the rustling noises in the background of some of my recent shows. It has to do with the setup I've got, and my unidirectional microphone stopped working, so I'm using another kind of mic, and it's picking up some paper rustling. I'll fix it, don't worry. So you'll have to sit through it and endure it today. I'll get it fixed for future broadcasts. And thank you to all of those who are suffering through the weird background noises to get to the gist of the great material we're bringing on here at Truth Jihad Radio. Today's show features DC Dave, a stalwart, intrepid reporter since, I don't know when, 20 years back. So bring him on.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. Kevin Barrett, bringing on interesting people with very important things to say. Today we're going back to a stalwart figure in the real alternative media, and that would be David Martin, otherwise known as DC Dave. He's got the website dcdave.com. He's well known for getting onto the Clinton scandals before it was popular, and he's got a great new piece out called The Charlottesville Operation. So, hey, welcome, DC Dave. How are you, Dave?
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be on.
Yeah, well, good to have you back. Well, this Charlottesville operation, it does look like an operation, doesn't it? I mean, it there's something about this, sort of like Charlie Hebdo and 9/11 and so many of these things. It smells like it's not just a purely spontaneous occurrence.
Well, just the extraordinarily strange reaction of the press. You know, the way they don't, none of them seem to want to look at the actual facts of the matter. Well, you know, it's all morality play. It's all those awful, awful, bigoted white supremacists whose rally turned violent and then turned deadly.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. And, you know, and they don't get into, you know, there were three parts to it, I guess you could say. You know, there was they were going to have their rally in former Lee Park, now Emancipation Park. And you know, there's that whole thing. And then almost 2 hours later, there's the car incident. After things had calmed down considerably, and that's one individual and one car, apparently, responsible. And then a couple hours later, 3 hours later, I think, there's a helicopter crash in the suburbs or the outskirts of the police helicopter that killed two people. And the press seems to put it all together. It's all responsibility of these violent extremist right wing people and they use it to smear Trump with.
Yeah. So there. And what are the odds here that first this street fighting with this amazing footage of the Antifa people street fighting against the evil white supremacist Nazi Ku Klux Klan Confederates would be so gripping, such perfect street fighting film footage. And then it just so happens that we get an auto mayhem incident, which is also supremely photogenic. And then we get the helicopter crash with the dead, uniformed, off patriotic officer, blah, blah, blah. You put all those three things together, it's like triangulation. You get a huge splash. Now, my question, though, is, so, it, you know, maybe that's all coincidence, maybe not, but is the way the media is reporting it, which, as you said, is ludicrous, it's an insane, you know, kindergarten-level morality play. Well, actually, that's an insult to kindergartners. Maybe a nursery school-level morality play.
Yeah.
Is this way of reporting it purely the natural response of a media that is always looking to push people's emotional buttons and get the next big thing going, the next narrative, this, you know, big, exciting, gripping, scary narrative, going so they can make money selling advertisements. Is that really what's going on? Or could the media actually be, you know, infiltrated by political operators working for the deep state who are pushing all those emotional buttons for their nefarious political purposes, not just to sell advertisements?
Well, obviously. I mean, obviously it's the latter. I mean, it's not even worth debating which it is. You know, I mean, when I first started covering the Foster case, this is something I addressed, you know, it seemed to have all the elements that would sell newspapers and magazines and everything if you just really dig into what's going on here. But they didn't seem to have any interest in the actual details at all. Mm-hmm. You know, no press people even went out to Fort Marcy Park. They described it as a park overlooking the Potomac, which it's not, you know. It's not for scenic purposes that it's a park. It's one of the old earthenware forts, earthen forts with the earthen berms, you know, that have grown up with trees now, that was protected the Capitol during the Civil War, and you know, only Civil War buffs would be interested in it. And I'd been living here for years and didn't even know it was there. And somehow Foster discovered it. But anyway, that's another story.
Is a thread there with the Civil War buffs. You know, a lot of Civil War buffs right now are scratching their heads over this hysteria about tearing down all the statues.
They should, you know. I've been following this, and if we hadn't had one of my wife's relatives visit us, I was kind of interested in driving down Lee Highway, which is the way you get from my house to there. But to get out of my neighborhood, in fact, you have to get on Lee's Corner Road and then we go over to Centerville, Virginia, where you pick up Lee Highway and drive down Lee Highway to Charlottesville. Are they going to name that Emancipation Highway?
Maybe so, yeah. Well, I think what they're going to have to do is take that interstate that, you know, goes down to Atlanta, and rename that the Sherman's March Interstate. Now, that'll really be rubbing their noses in it.
Might as well, you know. The Washington Post have first had it, then Yahoo picked it up. An article by a local lawyer in D.C. by the last name of Dalek about the unfinished business of the Civil War, you know, that the South is just not defeated enough. That's the problem.
Oh,
we just got to grind the heel on the people of the South. And if that doesn't produce a new Civil War, I guess nothing would.
Yeah.
And that's the theme of my article, you know. This has been a long time coming. You know, it started, I think, as I said, the race relations had never been better. When Obama was elected, it was a good sign of how good race relations are, and from what I've seen in my lifetime. You know, racism is at a very low ebb, and then right about the end of his first term, that Trayvon Martin episode is sort of signal, and several Hollywood movies that appeared at about the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I have a strong enough stomach to see Django Unchained. I've read about it. But I did see 12 Years a Slave, and I did see The Butler that I talk about. These all come about the same time as the Trayvon Martin thing.
Now that's kind of suspicious, isn't it? It's sort of like the Pearl Harbor blockbuster coming out right before 9/11.
Right before 9/11.
Yeah.
And even before that, I think Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation.
Yeah.
And
Rumsfeld. Yeah, Rumsfeld was running around handing out copies of Roberta Wolfstetter's book, Day of Decision, which is a neocon doublespeak book about Pearl Harbor. You know, on the surface, it's the official story of the evil Japanese pernicious surprise attack. And then if you read between the lines, you can see that Wolfstetter, like her genius military strategist neocon husband Albert, is fully aware that this was set up, that Pearl Harbor was a setup to make it look like the Japanese attacked us to get us into the war.
Yeah, yeah. through the back door.
And there's Rumsfeld handing out those books. He handed out hundreds, if not thousands, of copies of that book to everybody he'd met during the year-long run-up to 9/11. So 9/11 happens, and Pearl Harbor, Pearl Harbor, Pearl Harbor. So obviously our media is a propaganda apparatus that's going along with the deep state brainwashing of the populace. And so in this case, you're suggesting that with Trayvon Martin and these Hollywood movies, at that point, somebody in the deep state said, you know, having a black president and sort of solving the race problem and you know, letting that tension sort of dissipate actually might not be in our interest. Maybe we should stir things up.
It looks for all the world like it, you know, and that's my starting place in the article, you know. And then in 95, we have that Charleston shooting. If that's not an operation, I don't know what was. I mean, again, it's almost the kindergarten level with those pictures they had of the Dillon Roof and all of these, you know, Confederate themed places.
Yeah, he's right out of Central Casting.
Yeah, and that's my tie-in. That's you know, I did a long article called Dillon Roof and Jared Taylor. And Jared Taylor seemed to, you know, he comes in the wake of that and explains why Dillon Roof acted like he did. Like there was some rational connection between the discovery that our press is not really reporting a lot of black violence on white people. And what Dillon Roof then proceeded to do, you know, come on, this doesn't make any sense. But he manages to make it seem like there is some rational connection between being pro-Confederate and pro-white and going out and killing people for nothing. And of course, in saying things like that, he manages to tarnish the Confederacy, to tarnishes everything that the Confederate flag stood for. And he gives his interviews to magazines like The New Yorker, just as Richard Spencer gives interviews to The Atlantic.
Yeah, yeah. How does that work? You know, these kinds of people seem to get a lot more easy mainstream media access, just like in the world of Islam and the so-called war on terror, these extremist, you know, pro-Al-Qaeda types, like that guy in London, Anjum Chowdhury, they give him a big op-ed in the Washington Post. He gets all the media he could ever dream of to spew this BS about how Muslims love Al-Qaeda. And of course, all the polls show that 80% of the world's Muslims know that 9/11 was an inside job and the whole thing is a hoax, but you'll never see any Muslim representing that mainstream majority Muslim view on the op-ed page of the Washington Post. So likewise, you know, any, you know, reasonable people who might think that there were some, you know, good sides to the Confederacy or what have you, who don't seem to get the kind of mainstream access that, you know, Jared Taylor and these other kind of seemingly groomed people get, Richard Spencer and those guys.
Yeah, well, you know, Taylor, in his interview with The New Yorker, the New Yorker guy is in his house. He actually has a guy in his house, and he has, and the New Yorker interviewer mentions the Confederate stuff he has on his wall. You know, come on.
Mm-hmm.
I was given the opportunity to be interviewed by the BBC on the Vince Foster case. I mean, I'm a little bit media savvy. I know what they're going to do if I talk to them. They're going to, you know, everything I'm going to say, I'm sure is going to be perfectly reasonable. But if they give me a live interview that they can't, you know, manipulate the tape and just pick out what they want to pick out, I might submit to an interview. But otherwise, you know what they're going to do with it. And he knows what's going to be done with it when he gives interviews to people like this. You know, so, I mean, this is no good. And, you know, he was a key figure in the Dylann Roof thing. And then I discovered that he had been down in disguise. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're listening.
He'd been down in disguise to Charlottesville, meeting with Richard Spencer and Jason Kessler back in June. And I assume he confessed to it on Twitter, because he said on Twitter, "It looks like I'll have to find a new disguise," when somebody pointed out the fact.
This was Spencer in disguise or Taylor?
No, this is Taylor.
Taylor, yeah.
Taylor, yeah, that's in my article.
Yeah, you know? This is weird, isn't it? That Taylor presents himself as a kind of an intellectual, you know, a thinker, you know, well spoken, and so on, and tries to make a reasonable case that, well, if we have identity politics and every other group can do identity politics, why shouldn't white people? And of course, that sounds pretty reasonable up to a certain point. But then you have to wonder whether that discourse wasn't manufactured to kind of get something going as part of a larger strategy of tension.
Oh, yeah. And then the idea, well, what do white people have in common anyway? It's like saying we need a Gentile party.
Well, maybe we do.
That's a pretty big tent, you know?
Yeah. No, I thought about starting a Goys in Media or Gimme group just because we are a minority. You still there? Dave?
Yeah, I was distracted by my home phone ringing in the background.
Yeah.
Okay. The darn thing talks to me and tells me who it is.
A talking phone?
Yeah.
You know, we're living in a Philip K. Dick novel these days, it seems, sometimes.
Let's back to the main point.
So getting back to this, yeah, it looks like this white nationalist Nazi Ku Klux Klan Confederate thing is kind of synthetic. It's kind of a ginned up narrative.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe there are some sincere followers, but the leaders seem to be all phony. I mean, Richard Spencer is obviously phony. Jared Taylor, I'm certain he's phony.
Yeah, I had Jared on the show once, and it was interesting. You know, he as far as trying to make the kind of case for, you know, white nationalist identity politics, he did about as good a job as anybody could, I suppose.
Yeah.
But this could play into a larger agenda in various ways. You know, my sense is that one possible purpose of this would be to create this panic about the evil white Nazi Confederates, and it's tied in with the anti-Trump feeling on the sort of left side of the electorate. And
well, that's quite obvious.
So if the larger game plan here could be that, okay, Trump's going down one way or another, they're going to probably, you know, take him down with some Mueller's going to find something. I'm sure there's actually plenty of real stuff on Trump that's quite explosive, and they might have to manufacture some fake stuff too. Who knows? This Russia narrative is obviously ridiculous, but they're probably going to try to take Trump down. I just had David Ray Griffin on the show, and he predicted that Trump won't make it through his term. He gives him about a year and a half at most. And so in that context, where Trump is being cast as a buffoon, and we have this scare, this, you know, evil white Nazi Confederates are running rampant because of the internet. It's all the fault of the free internet, because they're able to gather online and spread their noxious viral ideas that take over their brains and turn them into these zombies, these Confederate Nazi zombies. And so we're going to have to do something about that. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to censor the internet. And how are we going to do that? Well, the internet no longer has any kind of free speech protection, because it's not run by the government, so it's run by these monopolies, these huge, massive monopolies, and every single one of the big media monopolies on the internet, whether it's Google or Facebook or what have you, they're all run by people of Jewish origin and Zionist ideology. And so you spread this hysteria, and now you can get the internet oligarchs to go along with a clampdown. And so they can start shutting people up. If there's a dangerous message out there, too much free speech, that's dangerous because it's creating the evil Zion, the evil of Nazi Confederate zombies. And so, you know, Kevin Barrett's show, you know, DC Dave's website, stuff like that, we need to be able to take it down. And so that's where I think this is going. This is what the president of France said after I put out my Charlie Hebdo book in spring 2015. He said, we have to find a way to force the internet service providers to stop allowing for conspiracy theories on the internet. And so that I think that's probably the number one part of the game plan. Does that sound plausible to you?
Well, certainly the internet is given a fit. They don't have a monopoly of information anymore. And that's a real problem for them. You know, the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, all these things that they've covered up, and then the historians have covered up as well, you know, Pearl Harbor, the assassination of James Forrestal, the first Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show before.
They've covered that up. The Zionist attempt to kill Harry Truman.
Yeah.
1947.
Letter bomb, right?
You know, the only one person, none of the Truman biographers mention it.
Yeah. You'd think that that would be included. It's kind of an interesting, explosive incident.
No kidding. I mean, not one of his biographers except his daughter, Margaret Truman.
You know, you think of it, if a radical Muslim had tried to kill the President of the United States with a mail bomb, you think that the media would cover that?
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, this is very upsetting when I put out an article about it. You know, and how did I discover it? It wasn't from reading Margaret Truman's biography of her father. It was from some citizen's comment on a book on Amazon.com on another subject. They mentioned this. And I said, hey, this really happened? So
yeah.
I began to do some research, you know, and sure enough. And so, you know, I think I've written a definitive article on that now.
Absolutely. Well, I think the Zionists are afraid that they're losing control of the narrative in various ways, at various levels. The BDS movement is big on the left. And then on the right, more and more people are just waking up and seeing this hidden history. It's not hidden anymore because you can encounter it in a comment on an Amazon book, you know. So it's things that things are, the American Legion just called for a real investigation of the USS Liberty. I mean, that's big, and that could
the American Legion finally came around on that.
Yeah. They passed a resolution at their convention about a week, 10 days ago. Calling
you see, because you know, Phil Nelson's book gives the American Legion hell for the position they've taken in the past.
Yeah,
so I guess they're coming around. They finally got the message.
Yeah. Maybe it's time to try to organize some speaking events at American Legion posts to educate folks. Because I mean, that's the demographic really that should be the most outraged by the way that the USA has been hijacked by a hostile foreign power.
Yeah.
You would think.
Well, let me take your speculation about bringing Trump down one step further. I haven't written it up yet. I've hinted at it in an article called Who is Donald Trump? I mean, really, do they need to take him down? Think about it. The foreign policy is pretty much what we would have had. Mm-hmm. If Hillary had been elected, so far, you know, and he's made a lot of talk about all these domestic changes he's going to make, but, you know, I just can't do it because of these recalcitrant Republicans in the Congress. And I mean, could this be a really big professional wrestling game? I mean, my friend Hugh Turley kept betting on Hillary because she's so divisive. And he failed both times with his bets. I collected a case of beer from him on this last one. But they've got an even more divisive person in Trump. Why not? And he's so feckless in fighting them back, like over the Charlottesville thing. He could go on the air address the country and say, here's what happened, you know, that we know so far. And you know, here's how the press has covered it. You know, he's got a bully pulpit there, but he uses it, you know, just with little sound bites and tweets and things that just make it, it polarizes people tremendously.
Well, I think he kind of thinks in sound bites, which is one reason he's a fairly effective communicator in our attention deficit disorder addled age. But yeah, I see your point. If they were going to get rid of him, you know, I agree.
Why would he make Nikki Haley his United Nations? And she was deeply, you know, connected to that Charleston episode.
Yeah, how was she connected?
Well, I mean, she was the governor at the time, and all the press just fell all over themselves praising her because she pushed through getting the Confederate flag off the Capitol building.
Right.
And she was the great healer, you know, and the great, I mean, the press loved her way too. Anybody that the press loves too much, look out. And it makes you wonder about her. I wonder about how she rose in politics in the first place. This accounting major from Clemson.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of made men and made women in the corridors of power. You know, Obama being an obvious example, somebody who suddenly sort of disappeared from Columbia University for a year. Nobody saw him. And at that time, he was in the Russian program, which was directed by a fellow named Brzezinski. And then Obama's first job out of college is with a CIA front working in Pakistan. And then suddenly, there he is at Harvard Law, and he's instantly the editor of the Law Review. And, you know, talk about a made man. And then he's sheep-dipped in the people by way of a nonprofit, you know, community organizing gig over in Chicago. He starts to run for office, and his opponents just fall by the wayside. Oh, secret information from a divorce case blows away this opponent, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, Obama's road to the presidency was obviously paved very, very carefully and thoroughly by the powers that be, and I imagine it works that way with a lot of the others too.
Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice's mentor at the University of Denver was Madeleine Albright's father, who was a defector from Czechoslovakia, I think. Who was Madeleine Albright's the one that didn't realize she was Jewish.
Was the Czech father the guy from Jewish background?
So
he's advising Condoleezza Rice, and he probably doesn't know for sure he's Jewish either, but he just kind of has this sympathy for Israel, and it just kind of comes out.
Yeah. At the University of Denver, which has deep, long CIA connections.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, I mean, the deep state is real. And I think they pick people at a fairly early age to groom, to make them into somebody important. Certainly, both Clintons. That's pretty obvious.
Well, regarding Trump, you know, it's possible that Trump was kind of an accidental president, but it's also It's also possible that I've heard this from others, that maybe an AI algorithm working with big data was looking at all the Facebook feeds and all the social media and stuff, and it spit out what would be the talking points for a false flag populist president. And then a couple of deep state operatives around Trump, and you know that Trump with his $1 billion plus is going to have people kind of keeping an eye on him. So a couple of people close to him are tasked with saying, hey, you know, you have a big ego, you want to be president, well, you could do it. And America's looking for somebody who would say this, that, and the other. So Trump's presidency actually could have been manufactured that way. And Henry Kissinger, before Trump was elected, was saying, you know, we could really do great things with Trump. You know, we should stop whining about him and recognize that, you know, things could be done using him. And so I wonder if somebody wasn't thinking along those lines before Kissinger ever blurted it out. In any case, now that Trump's in office, I don't think they need to kick him out in order to prevent him from doing things they really don't want him to do. No, he'll never bite the hand that feeds him that much. But it seems to me that for one thing, Trump's style and his, you know, his lack of, you know, major intellect and gravitas and so on, make him a public relations liability on the world stage. You know, he actually makes the, you know, president of North Korea, Mr. Kim, look like a fairly, you know, sane and down-to-earth kind of character. So I think that for the public relations benefit, the thing to do might be to whip up this hysteria, and that can be used to benefit Zionists, of course, because these crazy, evil Confederate Nazis and stuff, the reason we have to hate them is that they chant things like Jews will not replace us, et cetera, et cetera. So we manufacture this hysteria. We throw Trump out. It's a wrestling match, like you say, but Trump's the bad guy. He's cast as the villain. And, of course, it's all manufactured and theatrical. So the villain, Mr. Trump, gets thrown out of the ring early by the heroes, whoever they are, which is ultimately probably going to be the kind of Democratic Party mainstream that supported Hillary. Oh, my goodness. If they can sell that, they can sell anything. But anyway, yeah. That's a scenario I can kind of foresee.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does seem to be rather feckless about things. I mean, if he really, you know, like I say, you could go on national television for 30 minutes and lay out exactly what we know that happened at Charlottesville, and then not just say, oh, you're fake media. I mean, he could spell it out.
Yeah, you can also give us a few more details, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly, with the details. And all of the things on the Clintons, you know. I mean, he's got the Justice Department now. I mean, go get her. You know, they should go to jail, and let's have it out. And it go back to early in the campaign when he said there was something fishy about the Vince Foster case. He just dropped that out there, threw the bone to his supporters who all know there's something fishy about it. And then he didn't follow up and let himself get pounded for having said that. Well, you know, he could have followed through and reminded people that, hey, the press hasn't even told us about the 20-page letter that the three-judge panel ordered Kenneth Starr to include in his official report on the Foster case, which totally destroys the suicide narrative. He could have just blown them away at that point. But instead he said, I've said all I'm going to say on this subject.
Well, there may be a reason for that, Dave. You know, as Obama reportedly said to a close associate who urged him to actually go ahead and shut down Guantanamo and you know, take some other similar steps, he said, you want me to end up like JFK? And like Trump could be in the same situation where, you know, it's one thing to drop these little, you know, tidbits for your supporters, you know, do some dog whistles on Ted Cruz helped kill JFK for the Bush family. And, you know, George Bush was responsible for 9/11 and, you know, Vince Foster, you know, there's something fishy there and on and on and on. It's one thing to do that the way Trump does it, because the way he does it, it's not very credible. I mean, it actually, if anything, for the university professors, the lawyers, the people who matter, it actually discredits conspiracy theories and conspiracy theories. We're all as crazy as Trump. But if he were to ever actually lay the facts out on these issues and push it hard, I don't know if his life expectancy would be that great.
Well, yeah, I mean, that gets down to anybody who's genuine, would their life expectancy be very long.
That's true. Well, you can get away with internet radio shows for a while, I've noticed.
Well, you know, it goes back to the Paul Goodman quote, though, that in America you could say anything you want as long as it has no effect.
Yeah. Well, I like to think, though, that we are having an effect. It's just so incremental. That, you know, it's not obvious enough. It's not like, oh, well, we got to take these guys down this week or we're doomed. But it's like week after week after week, thousands and thousands of people are sneaking the truth out, whether it's, you know, in a slightly larger platform. You know, I've got a pretty good sized platform compared to the average truther's Facebook page. But that's a platform too. So there's thousands and maybe millions of these kinds of platforms on the internet sneaking the truth out.
I'm getting close to 2 million hits a year on my website.
There you go. Yeah, I'm in kind of that same league, too. So.
Yeah, and so people are, you know, they're learning it. And to his credit, the one really great thing that Trump has accomplished is discrediting the news media. People are a lot more receptive to my charges against the news media, which are way ahead of their time, I think.
Absolutely.
So now, you know, when I do my poems, that I'm going to send my one of my better poems about the to Rents. Rents publicizing my stuff. I'm going to do that one next week. It'll be a lot more receptive. There'll be a lot more people willing to listen to it now than before Trump came along.
That's right. Well, that's another reason that they might be trying to kind of set him up for a fall. And as they throw the evil Trump out of the ring in the wrestling match, they say, you know, boy, we sure had a close brush with fascism and racism and Confederates and Nazis and blah, blah, blah. We got to make sure this doesn't happen again. We need a way to make sure that people believe the stories they're being told by the mainstream and they don't get exposed, warped, and contaminated by these stories that they're seeing on the internet. So here's our program. And that program, I would imagine, would involve making it a lot more easy, if not mandatory, for the ISP providers and the internet oligarchs to take down people like us.
Well, they're going to give it a try. In my article, I used the professional wrestling narrative to weave several things together. You know, the Fayetteville sucker punch episode.
Yeah, now that's one I had kind of missed. Tell us about that.
Well, I've written a series of articles on that one, and I linked to them in my article. But if you go back and look at the punch thrown by this old guy, John McGraw, it's a professional wrestling punch.
Now, and let's remind the listeners that this is an iconic image in which a Trump supporter is punching a black protester at a Trump rally.
Yes, yes, really a black disruptor of it, but, yeah. You know, it cements in a lot of people's minds the notion that Trump supporters are racist. In the first place, you know, what is it about the Trump message that's anti-black? There's never been anything in his message that's anti-black.
Right, he's insanely Islamophobic, and he doesn't like Mexicans much either, but he hasn't talked a whole lot about blacks.
No, except that he wants to solve the inner city problem one way or another.
He wants to stop the murders in Chicago. Well, that's pretty anti-black.
But bringing jobs back.
Bringing working class jobs back. That would be terrible for black people.
And controlling untrammeled immigration. I mean,
the black working class
suffers just as bad or worse as the white working class.
Right.
From this unlimited cheap labor coming in.
Probably worse, actually.
Yeah, probably worse. You know, this devastation you see through the heart of Baltimore. It's from the lost jobs as much as anything else. You know, the people just don't have the money to maintain their houses or whatever. You know, it's just a huge collapse. So there's really nothing in his background that's the least bit anti-black racist. So why are the blacks supposed to be all upset about Donald Trump, of all people?
Well, it's a minorities
that
thing.
Fayetteville episode.
It's a minorities issue. We kind of have to, you know, genuflect to the political correctness doctrine that, minorities, the attitude towards minorities is by far the most important thing, and it all gets lumped together. So when Trump does go after Mexicans and even more so Muslims in a pretty over-the-top way, then that is emblematic of his distaste for minorities. And, of course, he got a lot of votes for this because people are so fed up with the political correctness and identity politics that a whole lot of folks didn't fall for that.
Well, exactly. You know, and in my article, "Who is Donald Trump?" I suggest he might be an accidental president. You know, that he was almost like this gathering in Charlottesville. Let's take a good cause and make it look bad through a bad vehicle here. So that this anti-immigration is a popular cause. And it's a good cause in a lot of ways. And so let's take a guy who will make it look bad. And darn. people liked him anyway.
Right. Which really makes you wonder if somebody kind of like Trump, only a lot more likable, a lot more thoughtful, you know, somebody who actually crossed their T's, dotted their I's, gave us the details on these issues, somebody like that would be way too popular. I mean, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way too popular. I'm thinking like this first debate. You know, I really think that initially they wanted to give us a choice between Hillary and Jeb Bush. And his and Trump's role was to gain sympathy for Jeb Bush by being really rude and mean to him. And damn, people didn't have any sympathy for Bush. They liked people. They wanted to be rude and mean to Jeb Bush themselves.
Well, yeah, the Bushes and the Clintons really don't get that much sympathy anymore.
Exactly, you know. So that didn't work. Well, plan B. Let's go ahead with the guy here, the professional wrestler we've chosen for the villain, and let him become president. Then as a president, we can, you know, have this divided country. Well, back to the professional wrestling metaphor, there's a saint right in the during the inauguration weekend, the press covered this open-air press conference that Richard Spencer's having. And out of nowhere comes an Antifa guy all clad in black to punch him in the chin. Hmm. Well, what do you know? Look carefully. It's another professional wrestling punch. It's a fourth that hardly, it doesn't hurt him at all. But they treat it as a punch. I watched it on Fox News the other night as a montage of the violence of Antifa. Starts with that one. Well, I mean, what did it accomplish? It makes Antifa look wild and violent, and which they are for the most part. And but it gathers attention to Spencer.
Yeah. So how much of this violence do you think was totally fake, and how much of it was real? I mean, some of the street fighting looked like pretty much real street fighting.
Oh, yeah.
People got hurt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole part, you know. I was just watching. I've listened to several people from the right-wing group. You know, it was a trap for them. They were funneled. They were denied, you know, Governor McAuliffe declared an unlawful assembly, which it was not unlawful. And then they forced them right into the Antifa crowd. And
pulled out the police presence.
And then he pulled out the police presence. Now, I have a strong recommendation in my article for this guy on YouTube who calls him. He doesn't give his name, so apparently some people know who he is. But he calls himself Son of Niwo. In his series, he reveals that he's a lawyer. And, he's right on the money on all of this stuff, I think. He said early on, like 2 days after it happened, that somebody can make a lot of money suing the city of if they were injured in the melee that ensued, that they could make good money. He didn't reveal at that point that he was a lawyer, but, that they could make money, a lot of money, suing the city and the state. If they were injured, because the city and the state did not perform their duties properly. In fact, now one of the left wingers is suing them because he got injured, and you know there were people using weapons, and he also speculates. That even the car episode was like a fallback, that the powers that be were hoping for more injury, that the melee wasn't as violent as it was intended to be. You know, even the New York Times reporting the day before that the University of Virginia Medical, the hospital there, had suspended for the day all elective surgeries so that they would be available to treat the wounded from the expected the violence.
Which wait a minute. When did, so that happened before the workday started?
On the New York Times reported on Friday, the day before.
Wow.
That, yeah.
That was, so that puts a whole new light on the police presence withdrawing right as the right-wingers have been funneled straight into the left-wingers.
Yeah, and the Funamiwo speculates that they really didn't get as much violence as they were hoping to cause.
Wow. Well, that does sound like lawsuit material. Although, if it's the deep state running this, and you know, we could speculate how the deep state could run this, there would be infiltrators on both sides. Of course, you know, Spencer being an obvious one, and the whole Antifa movement is probably heavily involved with infiltrators as well. And then you'd have the local government and the police also having a lot of people working for them who are actually, let's say, CIA agents whose cover job is being a police officer or a state official. You know, Jesse Ventura revealed when he was inaugurated, they led him down to the basement of the state capitol in Minneapolis, sat him down at a big table, and around that table were CIA people working in various capacities in state government jobs, including presumably state police. And these CIA people interrogated Jesse about how had he been able to win this third-party run. So that experience suggests, and we've got lots of other evidence as well. I've had guests on this show who've actually worked or known people who worked undercover. They were, you know, alphabet agency feds whose undercover job was, you know, being this police officer here or this, you know, state official there. So those kind of folks would be in a position to help orchestrate it as well. And if this is the case, I don't know, are they going to go ahead and pony up for all these lawsuits, or are they going to find a way to avoid that?
I wonder.
Yeah. They got deep pockets. They probably don't care that much, and they probably wouldn't care if the, you know, the local government or the state government is forced to pay up for lawsuits and their insurers have to pay and it all ends up funded by the taxpayers. That's no skin off their whatever anyway.
But the skin off them is if there were any coverage of the trial, which, you know, that lots of facts are going to come out that they don't want to come out.
But facts versus narratives, that's, you know, the mythological grand narrative of the good guys versus the bad guys often seems to totally obscure the facts.
Exactly. Yeah.
9/11, we see that. You know, Leo Strauss, the neoconservative guru, loved Western movies because they had the white hats and the black hats, and it was easy to tell who was who, and he said that's what the political world has to do. You have to, if you're a political manipulator, you have to create these good guys versus bad guys myths.
Yeah. But again, people are seeing through this more and more. And you know, I'm looking at comments on YouTube, comments on these Yahoo articles, Yahoo, AOL, all of the media. Are singing the same narrative, but if you look at the comments, not many people are buying it. More and more people are not buying it. You know, so they've got a problem. I mean, all of these techniques that they tried to use on Trump to bring him down during the campaign had brought down candidates right and left in the past, and they didn't work at all. That's because we have a whole new media landscape. And I mean, nobody's watching CNN anymore. And to get ratings, I mean, I don't know if you watch Tucker Carlson, but he's got the best thing on the air. By far.
Every now and then I've caught a YouTube clip of Tucker Carlson, and sometimes he actually is cutting through some of the BS every now and then. Not that I'm a fan of his overall, but I've seen clips of him actually, you know.
If they want any ratings and all, they have to get more and more like Tucker Carlson. I'm sure his ratings must be through the roof because, you know, it's fun to watch. You know, you get to see both sides. I mean, Rachel Maddow would never have somebody on who would contradict her. And I mean, it's because her narrative just doesn't work.
Well, it seems like the liberal elite, or the, you know, they're not really the elite, but the, you know, the liberal educated or miseducated or programmed side of society is targeted more and more for some of these things. For instance, with the Charlie Hebdo incident, that was all about the, you know, targeting soft-hearted, you know, well-meaning people, especially sort of on the left, to, you know, suck them in to unconscious Islamophobia to serve this clash of civilizations for Zionism. Mm-hmm. And here we see the similar targeting of well-meaning, sort of left-leaning people in a good versus evil narrative in which we all have to be on the same page. Just like you had to have a million people with the identical mass-produced sign, Je suis Charlie, I am Charlie. You'd have a million Charlies out there all being exactly identical. Likewise with Charlottesville, the entire nation insists on everybody following the liberal PC approach of deploring the evil deplorables. But like you say, it's not completely working. It's not
working. I mean, it's really not working. And one thing that, you know, they were hoping to really work this Charlottesville thing for much longer, and then Hurricane Harvey came along. You don't hear anything about Charlottesville anymore. You know, one thing, I think a lot of facts that are coming out on YouTube are not helping them much on Charlottesville, but it would look kind of bad if they kept just pounding away at Trump and his remarks after Charlottesville.
Here's a perspective that may be, you know, overdosing on red pills here, but could you imagine that the Charlottesville narrative was starting to fall apart, that it was, you know, it worked okay kind of for a day or two, but suddenly all of these questions got raised and suddenly, you know, Trump is speaking out of turn and actually getting a certain amount of sympathy. They're not able to push their line quite as unanimously as they wished. And it looks like it's actually backfiring. It could fall apart. And so in a sense, it was convenient for them that Hurricane Harvey suddenly comes along and essentially not only drowns Southeast Texas, but also sort of drowns the Charlottesville hysteria. So to the extent that things were swinging towards a more skeptical perspective on Charlottesville, this hurricane was too convenient. And given that we do have weather weapons these days, am I overdosing on red pills here?
Yeah, I've seen this stuff about HAARP and how you can manipulate that. I don't know. That's a bridge too far for me.
Yeah, probably so. Me too. But you know, you can't really put a whole lot past these people.
That's true. That's true, yeah.
Somebody made a lot of money off of Harvey, I would be even more suspicious. Well, and the other reason I'm not completely closed down to this kind of speculation about Harvey is that with Katrina, I don't know about the hurricane itself, but there was credible evidence of many reports of the levees being blown up.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely heard that.
And they made money. That was gentrification by other means. Just like 9/11 when they blew up the towers, which were, you know, riddled with asbestos and an eyesore, blight on the city, high vacancy rates. So they did urban renewal by other means, and certain folks made tons of money off it. Yeah. And likewise, it looks like that happened in New Orleans with Katrina. So, yeah, I'm just call me paranoid. You know, my job is to be a paranoid conspiracy theorist. If I didn't raise these things, I wouldn't be doing my job.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know what, back to Charlotte, I don't want to get too far off on that, though. Yeah. I'm not quite sure where it's going at this point. You got any ideas if there's going to be another Charlottesville? Or?
Well, it seems like there was that Boston follow-up that kind of fizzled out, and, you know.
The trial. I know where. But there's going to be a trial of this guy Fields.
Oh yeah.
That's people. We need to keep paying attention.
Well, that's where I believe it. It was my previous guest who said that he who is that Greg Felton, who said that there's a lot of interesting confusion, and there's some good questions about the background of this Fields guy, that he kind of has some Manchurian candidate things, you know. So there are suspicions that, you know, he's, well, for one thing, I think he's got some kind of mental health thing that
schizophrenic, they say that, you know, he washed out of the army as a schizophrenic.
Yeah.
That's in my article, you know. I point out that, they just tried to, the FBI just tried to frame a guy in Oklahoma City who was a schizophrenic, and his parents are absolutely dismayed. You know, he's just not mentally competent. So this fellow's ideal candidate to be used as a patsy, and also that it's pretty clear that the driver from the enhanced photos of the car, the driver is not wearing spectacles. He's not wearing corrective lenses. And all the pictures of Fields at the rally that day show him he wears glasses. Mm-hmm. And then the picture they showed, the sort of mugshot, he doesn't wear glasses. But when you pose for a picture, they make me take off my glasses now for my DMV, for my driver's license, for my passport. But I have to wear corrective lenses. So it looks like he wears corrective lenses. Well, if you're driving a car, that's the one time you're definitely going to be wearing them.
You would think.
You would think. And the way the car backed up looks like a trained stunt driver almost.
Yeah, it was very, very fast. Yeah.
Backwards, in a good straight line down the street's not easy to do. And there's a lot of curiosities, the people who traced the VIN of the car found it's supposed to have a sunroof. And this car didn't have a sunroof. And the windows all on the side were deeply tinted, so you can't see in through it. But, this is most unusual to have a car like that.
Yeah, that's actually illegal here in Wisconsin. I was pulled over once for tinted windows, supposedly too tinted.
Yeah. Well, there's just a whole host of, and then the son of Niwo discovered in his video that the car in the front, the minivan that was at the crosswalk, and then there was a silver-colored sedan behind it, that he drove into the back of a field, supposedly, whoever in his Dodge Challenger drove into the back of. But the car in front was parked there in the middle of the crosswalk for 5 minutes prior to the whole thing. It's like it was stationed there.
And
Son of Niwo has found the official police report and said it was stopped for pedestrians to pass, which is simply not true. So the official police report is false. So this is a problem. The narrative is falling apart. And so, what was that car doing there?
Well, I hope these questions will get asked in any trials that come up. Whether this, the criminal trial of this driver, or whether it's these possible civil lawsuits. Trouble is, of course, a lot of times there are ways to keep stuff like this from coming up in court.
Like in the Boston Marathon.
Bombing, yeah. Like, obviously, innocent guy just totally railroaded, despite exculpatory evidence that anybody with an internet connection can see, five seconds of searching.
Yeah. Well, that might be how they keep a lid on it. But it's getting harder and harder to keep lids on things.
Well, largely thanks to the work of people like you. I think we're about at the end of the hour here, so any last minute remarks?
Well, I see my brother's been trying to call me. It's his birthday today, and I
got to go call your brother.
I tried to call him earlier, and he wasn't in.
I will let you go. You can call your brother, wish him a happy birthday, and I appreciate your great work, DC Dave.
.com. DCDave.com.
All right. See you there. See you back.
Leading expert on a number of important topics.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good stuff there. Keep it up.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care, Dave.
Bye. Yeah.